Blog Talk Radio.
Of course, it's CPL, CPL, and more CPL, and we've had some very interesting battles so far. Rest day yesterday, and the guys are in St. Kitts. I think they call it Sugar City as well. And of course, it's the turn of our friends in St. Kitts and Nevis. They've got the Patriots. They've been playing against the Guyana Amazon Warriors, and of course, that game would have started just about 15 minutes ago. We'll certainly give you an update very soon on that match. And in terms of other developments, of course, in terms of the Super 50, my understanding that Trinidad and Tobago and Barbados will be hosting zones. We haven't heard from the West Indies Cricket Board as yet. Cricket West Indies, you continue to say Cricket West Indies. You know, that's what you should say, not the West Indies Cricket Board. The name has, in fact, been changed. But, of course, I'm told that Barbados will, in fact, be hosting a zone along with Trinidad and Tobago. That action should start in early October. And a little bit later on, I'll be able to be in a position to actually give you the teams in the various zones. But, of course, that will come a little bit later on. Without any further ado, let's go to where the action is and go and talk to the Deputy Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis, Mr. Sean Richards. Good afternoon to you, Mr. Richards. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Mason. Good evening to all of your listeners. I'm quite well.
Okay, thank good. You. I would imagine that you are very much there as well at Warner Park. Are you at Warner Park as yet?
I am actually on my way to the park, so I'm running a little late.
Mm-hmm. It's not often that you're late, though, Deputy Prime Minister.
It's not often, but I got home a little late dealing with some CPL-related matters, actually.
Okay, fine. All right. How is the promotion gone so far? It's really hot there in your country.
The promotions have been quite good. I think the response likewise has been quite good. I have saw a number of persons indicating a keen interest in attending all of the games which are to be played here. I suppose even more so on the weekend when persons may not necessarily have to return to work on Sunday.
Okay, so you expect some big crowds then at Warner Park?
Yes, I expect some big crowds. Persons are asking about the party stand. Persons are asking about the VIP standard, the regular seating in the stadium, and the ground. So I expect all it to be well attended.
Well, and it should be, because in fact already the Patriots, you're missing Chris Gayle, because I don't know if Nikhil, who's with us, can give us a quick update, but it looks as if the Patriots, your side, doing pretty well. Nikhil, what's the latest there?
Yeah, well, 47 without loss. Just good evening to all the listeners. 47 without loss after just 4.6 overs, and Gayle's on a roll, hitting Tampere for about 24 runs in one over. In
24 runs in one over. And Deputy Prime Minister, you're missing that.
Well, I'm not too far from the park, so hopefully.
All right. Okay, fair enough. You're not too far from the park, of course. St. Kitts is not big.
Exactly. Just a few minutes away.
Okay.
To the park is only about 20 minutes.
Okay. Do you expect a big, big crowd for this first game, Deputy Prime Minister?
Yes, I certainly do, and if you want to call back while I'm at the park, I will be able to give you more of a live commentary from there.
Oh, we'd be delighted. Just before you go, though, you would have hosted two of the finals. How does CPL help your economy?
CPL helps the economy in several different ways. You have persons coming in from overseas to support the games. You have a number of fringe activities taking place, because of the fact that CPL and persons are in a party sort of mood. You have T-shirts being sold. You have vendors being able to take advantage of the fact that we have CPL and to set up bars in the park, for example, and the concept of Carnival. And I can tell you that even the Carnival Committee has decided to take advantage of the opportunity and has set up a bar inside of the park to make some additional funds. You have regular vendors here. So in several different ways, the economy is able to benefit from CPL. I know that as a government, we were trying to get in someone to assist the government with doing some work. And that individual has indicated that there is difficulty in getting a flight into St. Kitts. So you know definitely that flights are full, persons having difficulty, hotel rooms are full, etc.
Indeed. So things should help your economy. And all the economies in the Caribbean, they certainly need help.
Yes, I do agree with that. And so whatever can be done to get that additional boost in terms of economic performance, we welcome it. And we know that the other Caribbean islands also welcome the same.
All right. Have you gotten to the park as yet? The Deputy Prime Minister, are you there? You're parking, I'm sure.
So. Not as yet. Not quite as yet.
Oh, there's so much traffic on the road then, Deputy Prime Minister?
Well, I stopped to pick up someone because I'm taking persons with me.
All right. Well, of course, as a politician, you need to help other people, huh?
Always.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Deputy. All right. We'll try and talk to you a little bit later on. But thanks to you, Deputy Prime Minister Sean Richards, for talking to us on Mason and Guests. Thank you very much indeed. Well, you heard from the Deputy Prime Minister. Let's hear from our own Prime Minister in the studios, of course, Dr. Ford. Hello, Doctor. You're the Prime Minister. You're not a deputy, are you?
What an honor.
How are you?
No, I'm doing well.
Your assessment of the CPL so far, by the way, Antoine Allen has joined us. The Tridents, your side, not doing well at all in this competition. They must be very worried. Your assessment, overall assessment of it so far?
Yeah, welcome to Antonio and to everyone else and the listeners. Yeah, overall, the CPL has been a much improved tournament. The batting and the scores, you know, it's been more exciting. The fielding hasn't been bad. The bowling has been good. The umpiring has been below par. The crowds have been very supportive. So all in all, as a product and for the viewing public outside of the West Indies, I think it's easily just behind IPL and Big Bash. And, you know, I think it's definitely the third best T20 tournament in the world. The Tridents are struggling. They're just one from the bottom, and you know, it'll be difficult to make that final four. They'll really have to improve to make the final four and to make it into the next stage.
Mm-hmm.
Underperforming and being at home, we haven't been able to utilize our strength. Our team was formulated to you know, make use of the conditions for fast bowling, but somehow we haven't used our fast bowling resources well, and we batted very below par, very badly.
Antonio, your assessment of it so far?
Yeah, good evening to the panel in studio, and good evening to the listeners as well. Yeah, I agree very heavily with what Dr. Ford has said. I'm pleased with the run scoring so far in this tournament. I think it's definitely one of the top three T20 tournaments globally. I'm not sure if it's third or second, but it's definitely top three in my opinion at the moment. I'm somewhat agreeing with him as well in terms of Barbados Trident underperforming slightly, particularly in the home games. The surface at Kensington Oval, as we saw in the test match earlier this year, it's been good for fast bowling, and I expected that there would have been, you know, a little more proliferation of fast bowling on offer, as opposed to, you know, relying on a couple of medium paces here and there. I would have liked to see a big four-prong attack for the home games.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think the Tridents can make it?
Yeah, definitely the Tridents can make it.
Watch your language.
Yeah, it's four teams that go through out of six, so you remain in with a shout more or less down to the last two games.
Indeed. Nikhil, your assessment?
Yeah, well, good evening to all the listeners and the panel once again. I think in terms of the Tridents batting, it's been disappointing at home especially, and I definitely think that for this home stretch, the selection has been poor. To leave out someone like Shamar Holder, who would have added a lot to that bowling attack on that Kensington Oval wicket, after seeing what Mohammed Irfan would have done in his first game at home. I think just watching Pierre bowl to the Trident's front line and sending in Springer at three and that collapse at 3 for 3, I think it was really dismal. Mm-hmm. To watch, and I definitely think they got it wrong, because to send Springer at three, mm-hmm. and really who looked uncertain and just looked like he was just a mere pinch hitter there. So I definitely think that some work needs to be done if they have going to have any chance of finishing fourth.
Okay, interesting. All right. Of course, what we're going to do now, we're going to continue to make an assessment of the team, but for the promotions, we actually said that we were going to be speaking to the man who made it happen in terms of the contractual arrangements, of course, the former CEO, as it was then, the West Indies Cricket Board, Ernest Hilaire, who, of course, is St. Lucie. He's on the line, and, of course, we also want to speak about the St. Lucie Stars. Hello to you, Ernest. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. I'm very well. And to your other guests, a very pleasant good evening, and to your listeners. It's been a long time, but a pleasure nevertheless.
Indeed. All right. I know that we promised we were going to have you on a couple of occasions before, but it never worked.
Yes,
but of course,
yes.
Patience is bitter, but the fruits are sweet. Now,
yes.
Talk to me, first of all, about the St. Lucia Stars. What's going on with them? Give me an assessment.
Well, I think most St. Lucians were disappointed, and probably an understatement, with the performance of the St. Lucia Stars.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you just looked at the team on paper, you'd want to believe that the team this year would have been a better performing team, and that the expectations were high that the St. Lucia Stars would have performed better than they did last year. Of course, it was another disappointing year, or at least so far it has been disappointing. I don't see, and there's certainly not enough matches left for the team to really improve their performance. So it is a big disappointment, and I believe many people, cricket followers in St. Lucia, have been trying to understand why the Stars have not performed. Because surely on paper, you expect that team to be more competitive. In the early part of the tournament, there were a couple of close matches that one thought the team probably could have won. But certainly the other matches when they came to St. Lucia, but they won one and lost the others. You did not really see the team being as competitive as you would have expected the team to be. And I mean, you can try to speculate as to what really is happening. And usually it starts, if it's not talent, if it's not the abilities of the players involved, from the list of players you can see on paper, there certainly are players who can perform and certainly to be competitive, then you have to wonder whether it is in the setup of the team and how the team, you know, is being managed and operated, and the whole psychology of the players and the focus of the players, whether they're not more off-the-field issues that may be affecting the team and its performance. So I suspect one would want to start off by saying that the team, of course, the team did have deficiencies. I think the team is probably short on quality bowling.
Mm.
But even then, you would expect the team to be a little more competitive. And when you look at some of the scores, the team probably had two scores over 200,
yes,
which, of course, in T20 cricket is an achievement in itself. So, yes, the team was short on bowling, but you still expected the team to probably be a little more competitive than it was.
So, Solutions are very, very disappointed in what has happened. Yeah, I would imagine. In fact, I'm just looking at some of the scores, some of the performances. I mean, Pollard has got 330 runs, Fletcher's got 247, Warner 170, but then Simmons. In 8 matches, you've only got, what, 2 more matches to play. You just won, I think you won just, what, 2 matches, I think you won? So you're in trouble. I mean, he's only picked up, 132 runs. Cornwell has got 95. You know, Darren Sammy from 7 matches only got 39.
Yeah.
The mayor of Castries. What's going on there?
I mean, exactly. And I think I saw something today, while I didn't have a chance to speak with him directly, I'm not sure whether Sami has the level of fitness at this point. I mean, you know, Sami's not bowling, which probably says something, at least trying to bowl. And then Sami has not scored 7 matches, 39 runs.
Mm.
I think when you're coming on the back end with 3-4 overs left, you expect Sami to score a quick 25, a quick 30 for you to really wrap up the innings and post a bigger total. But that has not happened. That too has affected the team. Even the last match, the team put, I think, about 183 or so.
Right.
You know, you still probably thought Sami, I think, scored about 2 runs or so. You still expected probably Sami would come in.
Mm-hmm.
And 2-3-6, you know, another 18, 20 runs. The team probably could have come closer to the total. So Sami has not really delivered at the ending of the innings. And that has been a problem in T20 cricket. You need to have the finishers to the innings, either in victory or setting the big totals. And that has been sadly lacking. And of course, like the Simmons, you expect big totals from Simmons. You expect Simmons to score a lot more runs than he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it just did not seem to happen. But given that notwithstanding, the team did have some decent scores.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I for my part, I would believe that the team was very short on quality bowling, and you really did not see where the wickets were going to come from.
Okay, Ernest, before we look at the CPL now, just get a quick update from Nikhil in that match played in St. Kitts.
Well, the Patriots off to a great start because
we have Gale, who's batting beautifully on 40 off 23, and Evan Lewis in much needed form, 27 off 19, and they're 71 without loss after just 7 overs. So they're off to a racing start, and their best bowler is being thrown around all over the park, and that's Green, who's been really good for them. Also dismissed Lewis in the earlier game in the tournament, and he's just really beating bowling right now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Ernest, you're the CEO of the Grassroots Cricket Board when the contract would have been done, and when you look back at it, are you happy so far, given what many people consider to be a rather generous contract?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy, and if you ask me, maybe sometimes I view CPL in some regret, I must admit. And I'll tell you why, because when we had conceptualized the CPL, and certainly when we entered into negotiations and when we signed the agreement, there was a clear understanding of the path that would be followed. One was expecting to see major investment in the CPL to raise the brand value and to establish the CPL as a premier, if not, but probably we never thought we would surpass the IPL, but certainly would probably seen as the next in line in terms of world T20 leagues, and that there was going to be that investment. And secondly, there was going to be investment in the regional team. So, for example, the St. Lucia Stars would not be, you know, a six-week engagement where you just have the matches and it disappears for almost a whole year. That there was going to be significant investment. And you'll recall that the Western Cricket Board had the concept of the wheels and the spokes and wheel, and wheel, where you would have all those territorial, training facilities and centers of excellence feeding into a high-performance center. And the CPL was going to contribute significantly to that to ensure that the territorial team are producing the talent that is required for the center. And I think the evolution of the CPL, and I cannot pretend that I know what happened after I left, because I think my last board meeting was when the board approved the contract. So I don't know what happened thereafter, and I cannot judge or say anything negative about anybody, except to say that, I mean, the concept of the CPL then was slightly different to what it has unfolded to be, because I think shortly after Digicel bought over the CPL, again, I'm not sure what happened and the details of that, but, I mean, we've not seen the CPL evolve in the kind of setup that we had dreamt of in 2012. And therefore, to that extent, I would say that there is some regret. I mean, when I listen to some of the stories about, you know, how different teams are trying to raise money to get governments to put in significant amounts of money into the respective teams, that was not what was anticipated. And certainly when all the business modeling was done with the potential owner, that was not part of the business modeling. So in those respects, I do hold some regret.
So where do you think the CPL model, based on the business model that you had, because I reflect on the fact that the board had run a T20, regional T20 tournament at a loss, and tends to run most regional tournaments at a loss, but based on the model that you've seen initially, where has been the revenue shortfall as far as you can see?
Well, you recall that I said there was supposed to have been a major investment in raising the brand value. Mm-hmm. Like you said, we had started in the Caribbean T20, mm-hmm. which in itself was limited by the capital that we had available to us to really invest in the brand value of the tournament to be able to attract major revenue. Because you would appreciate the two main sources for revenue. It is the media rights arrangement and team sponsorship arrangement. The other revenue streams, such as gate receipts and even merchandising, are not that significant enough to carry a profitable enterprise. So essentially, it's media rights and sponsorship. But for you to get value in that, your whole tournament status and reputation and image has to be lifted, which is where there was going to be the initial heavy investment to raise the brand value to be able to attract significant media rights deals, as well as team sponsorship deals. But that did not seem to happen. You've not seen a kind of investment to make the CPL reach that level of brand value where it can attract significant team sponsorship and a significant media rights agreement. And again, I'm speaking from a very limited knowledge, I must say so, because I don't know the exact details. But from what I can see and from what I know, that is where I believe the business model had pitched itself. And there were a lot of scenarios that were done and presented. I must admit and say to you that the absence of Indian players continue to be, a challenge for any T20 league anywhere in the world. And one would have believed maybe India could have been persuaded to at least allow their 80 players to play as against the first team players to try to raise some of the value of the T20 league. But yeah, essentially, that's my thinking.
Yeah, well, speaking to, the parent of a young cricketer, I think you've pointed out some of the things. But one is that the CPL is a seasonal endeavor, and after it's finished, nothing seems to happen to the franchise.
Exactly.
It goes dormant. Mm-hmm. And another big worry from younger players who are outside of the tournament is trying to see their way in, because at times some individuals get contracts and you can't see the correlation between ability or promise and the contracts, and there's some who are out and can't get in. And up to today, someone was asking me, well, is there room for another Caribbean T20? Is there room, as far as your recollection of the contract as it was formulated, for any other T20 to expose others who may be hidden from us?
Well, I think there are contractual limitations on WICB doing so and authorizing another T20 league. I cannot give you the specifics, but there are limitations. And that would have been so because if an investor is saying, I'm going to put, say, $200 million into a league, initially a pronto reservoir value to establish the infrastructure, whatnot, I need to have sufficient space to recover that investment. And I need to ensure there's no other competition to prevent me from recouping my investment. So there would have been limitations on the WICB from doing so. The first point that you made in relation to, you know, being the parent of a child playing cricket and the aspiration to be on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the CPL would be at the apex of the system. It's an elite league. So there would be many leagues. There could be national leagues, there could be community leagues. And one would eventually be at the top of the pyramid would be the CPL. So it's a question of, and again, back to the point of, you know, the concept was that the CPL would be, that the franchises would not just be a seasonal six-week endeavor, but really it would be better than that. And there would be a reservoir producing talent that makes its way all to the top of the pyramid, to the apex of the pyramid. And therefore, the young man who's played, 17 years old, is supposed to be involved in T20 cricket, either in his community or his national level, as it may be, and playing his way to the point where he's seen as a star that has to be purchased by one of the franchises. And that's probably what we're not seeing. Although, for example, in St. Lucia, we do have our own version of a T20 league that's played among T20 teams in St. Lucia. But that was supposed to be a lot more vibrant and institutionalized than what it is now. And we've not seen that as part of the CPL setup. CPL almost in like an event, a one-off event that takes place every year and not integrated into our whole cricketing ecosystem, if you want to say, our whole cricket structure throughout the region.
Yeah, I think that the league that recently emerged in Canada, Global T20 Canada, might actually serve a significant, you know, role in terms of identifying young talent regionally. So we might have perhaps an exodus of the players who might be on the fringe of representing a CPL franchise or who might be eager to represent a CPL franchise. They might, you know, try to get involved in a Global T20 Canada. And I know that in USA as well, there's some efforts at getting leagues mobilized as well. So, I mean, in lieu of a Caribbean T20, and I would have loved for the Caribbean T20 to continue, you know, taking place, but based on the contractual obligations, I think we'll have to rely heavily on those North American leagues to serve that purpose.
Yeah. But we should also have national T20 leagues. I mean, there's no reason why players from Grenada, St. Vincent, Barbuda, Antigua cannot come and play in the St. Lucia National T20 League.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, the monies would be $60,000 US, $80,000 US, or whatever. But, you know, we should have players moving between the islands playing in national T20 League. If that's the interest of the player.
Well, I may be wrong, but there is the impression that the Cricket West Indies had in the negotiations agreed to a fixed payment for each CPL season. And reflecting on your vision where CPL was going to go, that constant payment for Cricket West Indies seems quite incongruent with your idea of an endeavor that would grow. So how do you rationalize what Cricket West Indies would have agreed on and the vision of the tournament in spite of the reality now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's not this, and that's a very, very good question. I mean, a very good question. And probably that's one of the regrets that there probably was not sufficient, a sufficiently binding obligation on the tournament, the CPL, that is, to achieve that the dream that we had for the development of T20 cricket in the region. So you're absolutely right on that. I mean, the payment was just more royalty payment, but the franchises, were supposed to be more than just participating in an event. I mean, they were supposed to be, you know, have a more lasting presence in each of the jurisdictions where they are located, and to actually contribute. But if you ask me, and I think you'll probably answer the question, kind of incongruent. There's an incongruence there that the vision did not seem necessary to be reflected, you know, in some of the binding obligations of the league. and maybe, and I don't have the contract before me, and I've not seen it since 2012, but from just memory, to some extent, you are correct.
So would you not have been CEO when the contract was signed?
I'm trying to remember. I think my last board meeting was when we actually approved and agreed to go ahead with the PPL. I mean, I cannot recall. I can't recall it being signed when I was still CEO, but certainly I know the board meeting where it was agreed to by the board. And there was quite a lot of debate and discussion on it. And they were, like I said, all the pros and cons. But the last board meeting I attended, I think it was in Trinidad, actually.
Mm.
You know, when we agreed to the CPL.
Ernest, you get a lot of criticism for the CPL contract.
Well, I mean, that's the politics of cricket. I mean, if you're not everybody, blame you for everything that went wrong, you know. But that's just the nature of it. That's just how life unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scapegoat. If you're not it, they say, oh, they're still there. It's the one that caused CPL. If CPL had taken off and was become the second biggest World T20 league after the IPL,
mm-hmm.
nobody would say the NSC there that was behind it. Everybody has to take ownership of the initiative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's so many things I can point to in this cricket that originated during my time as CEO and Dr. Hunt as president. But that's not even important. I mean, you take those blows when you're in that kind of public life, and that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yes, there will be the criticism because there are disappointments with it.
Right.
But of course, if it was excellent,
right.
nobody would have said that.
And it's for 50 years, is that right?
I can't recall the exact wording. I think there is a period and a right to renew if they met all the conditions of the contract or something like that. But I can't remember the exact period.
It's very good to have you on. Maybe we haven't heard from you in a long time. Food for thought in what you're saying. Any recommendations going forward in relation to the whole question of the CPL? What do you expect going forward? Of course, there's an exit clause at the end of 7 years.
Yeah.
You're very much aware of that, huh?
I think, though, and we have to be frank and honest about it. We are very small economies, yeah? And to be able to sustain a T20 league in the magnitude of an IPL or Big Bash is always going to be difficult.
Right.
You know, the Big Bash in Australia is virtually financed through the media rights agreement, which is a domestic agreement. I don't know we can ever reach that stage. So essentially, it has to be a product that is seen overseas and that we receive the media rights for it. And therefore, we have to have a very clear understanding of just how much whoever owns the rights to the league is prepared to invest to make it as big a league. Maybe not as big as Big Bash or IPL, but certainly one that will have significant brand value. And I will tell you, our thinking then was that the WICB did not have the resources to do so. In fact, before we had moved that is the direction we did, Chris Derring had done a feasibility study for T20, the commercial T20 league in the Caribbean, and the final recommendation was that it was not viable to have the T20 league. It was said that it was not viable to have a T20 league, certainly on the scale that board members had wanted, and he had done comprehensive research on that. But there was a commitment from the board that we ought to have a T20 league and not be left behind in the global cricket landscape. So it is always going to be a challenge to have one. And I think moving forward, one just has to discuss the whether parameters exist between a commercial T20 league and a T20 league that can also serve our developmental purposes. You know, for example, England was talking about having a city-based T20 league, but not doing away with the Vitality Blast, which would still be county-based. So, I mean, you know, the extent to which now we can have a developmental T20 league, a la Vitality Blast that is developmental, but at the same time have a commercial league that is probably franchise-based. And whether the two can coexist, and the extent to which the rights owner and the WICB can agree that for developmental purposes, it has to have its own T20 league, and the scope and scale of it, because any rights owner would be concerned that yours become bigger than mine,
mm-hmm.
and mine loses value and I lose money. So maybe there is some space still. And again, like I said, I'm not in the mainstream of West Indies cricket board matters, so I cannot tell you whether
mm-hmm.
those discussions have started or even that thinking exists.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect we need to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much indeed, Ernest, for coming through and talking to us. And I know you're a politician now. Huh? How are you doing in politics?
Well, I mean, I'm learning quickly.
You are, huh? Well, you should. I mean, you should because, I mean, you won by what? Was it 11 votes?
Excuse me? No, a little more than that. A little more than that.
12?
But in an election where your party lost, there was a tremendous swing against you.
Yes.
Just winning is sufficient.
Yeah, I know. I know you run with the skin of your teeth. It's always good to hear from you, Ernest. In fact, my executive producer is in the studio here just shaking his head with a question. And that's, of course, Ronnie Clark, the Liverpool man. Thank you very much, Ernest, for coming through and talking to us.
I'm an Arsenal man. So.
You're an Arsenal man.
Good
oh, my
team,
God.
Sir. Very good.
Well, Arsenal. I saw you're a Man United man. Because we're going to fire Mourinho tomorrow.
No, he's the same red, but I was not Manchester red.
Oh, you're not Manchester red. All right. Thanks very much, Ernest Hilaire, for coming through and talking to us. Wonderful to hear from the former CEO, as it was then, the West Indies Cricket Board, offering some rather interesting food for thought. Let's pause for business calls. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbara's Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
$12.3 million won! Instant scratch tickets from the Barbados Lottery have already paid out over $12.3 million, over 705,000 winners between January and June this year. So why don't you get in the winning?
Well, he's now a member of parliament in St. Lucia, and of course, former High Commissioner to London as well, and former CEO. Well, what's the latest there now, young Nikhil?
Yeah, well, the Patriots, they started well, but 11 overs in, and they're 81 for 3. So after some brilliant bowling, 2 overs bowled by Tahir, he's bowled 2 for 6,
mm.
2 wickets.
Gail Long, is that?
Yes, Gail. Mm. As Paul suggested, in the pocket, Kimo Paul would have just celebrated putting Gail in his pocket.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So just look at Tanvir. Give those figures quickly.
Yeah, 3 overs for 30 runs.
The Tanvir.
Green is 3 overs for 23 runs. Riyad Emirate 1 over for 15 runs. Kimo Paul 2 overs, 1 for 7. And Tahir 2 overs, 2 for 6.
All right. Interesting. So continue to update. 81 for 3. How many overs gone now?
11.
11 overs gone. So that represents a bit of a decline, really,
yeah,
by
yeah,
the Patriots.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's go to Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, we're going to have a quick turn around and talk to our very good friend, our fellow Alfonso Wallace, the man who jogs around the Queen's Park Savannah. Hello to you, fellow. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm very well. Good evening to you, your guest. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to hear you, fellow. Now, talk to us. Your overall assessment of the CPL so far. Are you happy, fellow?
Not really, Andrew. I'm not happy at all with the Hero Premier League. The Hero Caribbean Premier League 2018, I'm not. When you look at the performances of some of the franchises and some of the individual players, you beg the question, how good are they? When you look at the St. Lucia Stars, they continue to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Despite good scores, they can't defend them. You see elementary mistakes in fielding, particularly catching. The Barbados Striders, mm-hmm. they're not as potent as we expect them to be, and they're just not playing good T20 cricket despite different leadership, same
mm-hmm.
management involving mm-hmm. being as coach.
Mm-hmm.
And they're seeing that they're slipping. When you look at DKR, they're the ones that stand up for Bill. The Ghana Amazon Warriors are lukewarm. Talawas are lukewarm. The kids and leave it. They're the underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no big difference. No, there are no clear-cut performers, per se, in the Caribbean Premier League. And then we look even Andrew, outside of that. We look at the umpire. It's even the last couple of seasons. So I beg the question, is T20 cricket really improving our cricket or is it taking it backwards?
Mm. Interesting. The umpiring has been below par too as well, Philo.
The umpiring is poor. Real poor. And you know, you try to understand why when you look at all the T20 matches that these guys have umpired throughout their careers.
Mm.
You know, they all do night games, so it shouldn't be anything new.
Mm.
And they're just making elementary mistakes. And it puts West Indies cricket in a bind. Because where do our umpires go from here? Where do some of our outstanding performers go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And we beg the question, is this CPL and those franchises really working towards the development of West Indies cricket and our young players? Are they developing under this T20 franchise system?
Mm-hmm.
I would say no.
Antonio, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with certain elements of the assessment. I'm concerned about the umpiring, for sure. That's definitely not been of a sufficiently high standard. But also, we would have spoken to Ernest Lea a short while ago, and I'm concerned that a lot of the young players who find themselves performing in their domestic leagues, because there are leagues in Barbados, Trinidad, there are leagues in St. Lucia, as you would have mentioned, and the top performers from those leagues are having a difficult time getting into the CPL. And that's largely because it's entirely somewhat of a private arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to pick and choose on any player in particular, but I want to highlight Justin Graves, who was extremely prolific in the Global T20 Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds himself not having opportunity in the CPL. There are many other guys who would have bowled very well. And Nkosi Ross is a guy that comes to mind who's been extremely tight in Barbados T20 tournaments over the years. But what do these players have to do next? What's next in line for them? And then I highlight a player like Ross Taylor of international repute. He's 34 years old. And you look at his CPL stats from 2013 until now, and he really has some pretty below-par statistics from 2013 until now. He's had no good season. His strike rate has always hovered around just over 100.
Mm.
He hasn't really scored a lot of runs either for any of the franchises he's represented.
How many runs has he scored? You've got the stats.
This season so far, he averages 6.5. He's got 26 runs. Last year, he had 142 runs at 20.3. 2016, 164 runs at 23. 2015, he had 265 runs at 53, which is acceptable, but there was only one score over 50.
Mm.
2014, and the list goes on and on.
And
2014 was the standout.
Just to emphasize what you're saying, you have somebody like Martin Gupta, who would have got 160,000 US to play in this league, actually being dropped when the Tridents would have played in the last game. So, and you have people like Lendl Simmons, who are just averaging in the low figures. And I definitely think we have to look at the Global T20 League as more of a development for our West Indian-based players than the CPL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can agree with that at the moment. That's how it looks like it might be, because we're not seeing a lot of players transitioning out of the local leagues, moving on into the CPL. And for me, that's my greatest issue at the moment.
Hello, you want to comment on that?
Well, Andrew, there's a young man called Kyle Mills.
Yes.
Who helped the Rhode Island franchise won the silver tournament. He was a big player. They're saying the CPL for the St. Lucia Dukes and last year for the St. Lucia Stars.
You can't get in at all.
The wilderness. He's like Charlton, he's gone into the wilderness.
And we beg to
question why some of these international players are coming over to the Caribbean. And the worst thing to feel as an international player is to be dropped. And Martin Gustin and those guys have come to the Caribbean and they're taking it for a joyride.
Mm.
And nobody wants to stand up and tell Martin Gupta and them, you come to our country, you come here to play cricket to help West Indies cricket, you need to perform.
Mm.
To get a job as an overseas player, it's horrible.
Mm.
You know, that's something that overseas players does not want to happen to him at home. And this is a New Zealander who's done wonderfully well, and he's come to the Caribbean, and he's been here before. He also captained the Ghana Amazon Warriors, and he's come to the Tri-Cities, and he has struggled.
Mm-hmm.
You have Lendl Simmons and those guys who are on big salary. And they are struggling, putting no effort into their cricket.
Mm.
And here are the men's cricket going in the Caribbean, in particular for T20 cricket.
Mm.
We are not certain if T20 is supposed to help us. Is it helping our cricket? I would say no.
Mm.
We need to look at what they're doing in relation to our young cricketers, get them involved, and get some of our senior cricketers who have past experience involved with those franchises somehow or some fashion. If we look at the St. Lucia Stars, they need an injection of confidence. They need to get a former West Indies cricketer in that camp to talk to those young men of how to come out of the dump. Fowler cannot do it on his own. Sammy is struggling. Lendl Simmons is struggling. David Warner is struggling. Who's going to help them to come out of that? Is it going to be Roddy Essex and Brad Hodge who's coaching them? They need some more local injection into those franchises. Develop our cricketers. I help give them the right mindset.
Philo, are the franchises just playing names and sometimes old names instead of looking through their roster and seeing
what may be there. I mean, even with the Tridents, you can see some senior players performing as well.
Yeah, but the Tridents has picked up Mario Ross and Jason Batten at 7 and Shamar Springer at 3. But with the thinking behind that, you have number 2 bats from the world, Steve Smith, and you're batting the man all over the place instead of putting him at a set position to be a bill of scores around you. The franchises need to understand, those guys who are in charge, that they are representing various territories. And there are players in the territories who people believe will, you know, should be in those franchises. They have to prove the people wrong by getting those guys, both young and experienced, to perform at their optimum. When you look at the IPL, those guys who are involved in the CPL, who play in the IPL, they perform at their optimum. Why? We don't know. But they need to come to the CPL and repeat what they do for the IPL franchises. All cricket looks poor. That CPL looks poor because of those overseas players who are not performing. And the locals will see that and say, well, if he's not trying, why should I try? Which is not the right thing to do. But we can see it.
And Mr.
Those international players need to help the franchises a lot more.
And Mr. Wallace, does the fact that a team is allowed to play 4 to 5 overseas players at a time, does that have a lot to do with the unsuccessful nature of our development?
Yes, it does. I think that the numbers are a little too big, 4 or 5 overseas players playing. But again, it's how you mix those overseas players with the locals. And we're not seeing that good mixture at all when you look at the final 11. We're not seeing it. We're seeing the overseas players just holding a certain position and that's it. Some of them are not even trying in the outfield. It's just very embarrassing. I know the Caribbean is a wonderful place to be, but we want all cricket to look good. It's the international public that's watching all cricket.
Philo, let's spend some time with the Tridents now. Of course, lots of people here in Barbados. This show originates in Barbados. We've got listeners all across the world. But what is your assessment of the Tridents? I mean, when you look at it, the last 3 matches, in Lauderhill, 156, then they made 147, and then what, 128. So the last 3 matches, they've not gotten over 160. Problems in the Tridents team?
The Tridents team is not balanced, Andrew. There's a problem at the top of the order. You had Dwayne Smith from Kapil in Guyana. That did. Shea Hope was an outstanding player there. He batted wonderfully well. He did not capitalize on that 88 that he scored. Dwayne Smith is the fellow who is being sought after, and he has something to offer, but he himself has to look after himself and dig deeper into the tank. Because a lot hinders on him if we go to the Tridents are going to get a good score. Dwayne Smith has to be there. Dwayne Smith is not even batting deep into the overs. So a lot of pressure is being placed on the middle order. And the middle order is susceptible because there's no stability. And Jason Holder's leadership will come into question. It is the up and down movement of the batsmen that have them uneasy. You know, nobody knows if they're going to bat at 3 today or 4 tomorrow. They're all over the place. So they need to find stability. We have Robinson, who's been there for a very long time. Is he too comfortable as coach of our franchise? The batsmen haven't had any input as a bowling coach, or he's just with the bowlers. These are questions that need to be answered. Because there's no cohesiveness to me in the same time. The Tridents. That's why we're all over the shop. Our finals are so struggling. And the people need to see better performances because they have to have a governor who are going to come and be explosive. And that service at Kensington Oval will suit the Talawas because the Tridents team wants to be able to play at home. They can't understand how to play on the pitch, which is quite sad. So they need to get their think tanks working a little better. And at the end, they might need an injection of some local knowledge. Bring in a fellow for 4 or 5 days to work with the team. And then help those fellows to understand what is required of them and how to approach certain situations.
Well,
Richard goes to Pakistan and he's the mentor for Pakistan franchise and never played T20 cricket.
Right. Good point.
We need to try and draw on some of these players to get in there and help the younger players.
Well, tomorrow they've got a big match against the Talawas. That's, of course,
yes.
Kensington Oval starts at 8 o'clock. Would you make any changes to the side?
Yes, I would bring back Martin Bill. I would bring back in Hashim Amla and Lionel Sikham and Reggie Raya after those 2 guys. And Dwayne Smith and Martin Guttel have to back 15 overs properly and get a decent score and leave the rest down in the middle. None of those 2 openers should not be out in the first 10. They need to bat and bat properly and get Tridents if they bat it first off a very good start. And the Tridents need to win those remaining matches at Kensington Oval. Because when they come to Queen's Park Oval, they're not going to be given any better service.
No.
So they need to win at home because on the road is a lot difficult. So they need to win those matches at home and they need to get those international players ready mentally to go there and represent Trident with pride.
Two questions.
Right now the Tridents are broken.
Oh, yes, indeed. Oh, interesting. Well done, fellow. Now, look into your crystal ball, fellow. Do you think the Tridents will qualify?
I do have a love for the Tridents to qualify. There's no doubt about it. But they need to believe in themselves that they can qualify. And they need to play the cricket to qualify as well. If they don't qualify, it's a mistake, you know.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, they have to go there and do it.
Mm.
It cannot be difficult to win cricket matches if you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
T20 cricket is stability. It's not about bat lap. It's about stability, having a set unit and executing your plans properly. We are not executing our plans properly. And we find ourselves against the eight ball.
Mm-hmm. And my final question, Philo, we're just about the halfway stage of this competition. Look into that crystal ball again. Who do you think will win it based on what you've seen so far?
Andrew, I have CKR to win.
Right.
And I have the Amazon Warriors who continue to be fighters, to be very close in their game.
Mm-hmm.
They have a point to prove. But I think CKR, when you look at it, their unit is a very good unit.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of class. They have depth. They get out of the woods sometimes because of teams are fair them, which is expected.
Mm-hmm.
But I have CKR to win this competition yet again.
Mm-hmm. Phil, I want to thank you very much for coming through and talking to us and continue to jog around with Queen's Park, Savannah.
I did that this morning.
Okay. All right, Phil.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right. There you have it. Former West Indies opening batsman, of course, former captain of the Barbados side, Phil Alfonso Wallace, who now lives in Trinidad and Tobago. That's all for business cars. Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth, sport, and culture.
12.3 million dollars won. Instant scratch tickets from the Barbados Lottery.
We've got Dr. Andrew Ford as well, and of course Nikhil is here. We've spoken to Philo Wallace, as usual, with a great deal of passion, earnestly lived. Very interesting interview with him, the former CEO of Cricket West Indies. And, of course, we want to continue to go around the region. We spoke to the Deputy Prime Minister of St. Kitts, our good friend Sean Richards, who by now should have arrived at the ground. Doctor,
yeah.
You think so?
Well, it depends on how many people are there.
But what's the crowd looking like there, Nikhil? Is it big?
Well, it doesn't look very full from what I can see on the computer monitor. But
it's never full there.
That's just hearsay. So we have to maybe give the Deputy Prime Minister another call and ask him what he thinks.
Yes, what's the score there now? And give us some details.
Well, they're actually losing wickets rapidly.
Rashaun
Premis would have got his first game today, and he's bowled really well. His first over went just for 3 runs, and he picked up a wicket. So they have the last two recognized batsmen in, and then they have the two all-rounders to come with Dev Stitch there at the crease on 5 and Mamadullah Riaz on 1. But after Gale and Lewis would have departed, Brandon King, who played a beautiful 60 against the Tridents and winning the St. Kitts Patriots that game, he just made 3. And Devin Thomas, who's looked good for them throughout the tournament, he just had a timid 13 with Cooper just on 9. So they just have basically Ben Cutting and the Bajan, Carlos Braffa in the shed left to come out, and they're really struggling with merely 104 for 5 after
in over number 15.
Yes.
And I won't say they were 50 all without loss.
They were actually 70 without loss after 7 overs. So they were flying.
Oh dear. So they're in trouble there. And you got a shot of the crowd there. How's it looking?
Well, I see they're just the children are there enjoying themselves. I think, but I think having looking at this performance, and I think this is why it was so vital for the Tridents to pick up that win on Saturday against the Patriots. When you have a man that's bowling 23 dot balls in a T20 match with just 120 balls, how can you throw a game away from there? It's really disheartening to me.
Shocking. Okay, well, of course we're gonna go to Guyana now. Of course, Mason, I guess it's about going around the world, going around the region. Let's go to Guyana. I think it's Georgetown, Guyana. Our good friend Roger Harper is. Hello, good evening to you, Roger, former West Indies off spinner, former West Indies coach.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to all listeners.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing, Roger?
Oh, very well, thank you. The sun is with us, you know, the rain has gone, so things are bright and hot here in Guyana.
Well, I know you, I'm sure you knew I was going to ask you that question first of all, if it's raining in Guyana, but you've preempted me and you told me that I had lots of sunshine today and the weather's very good.
Yes, it's been good for the last week and a half or so.
All right, now let's talk CPL. Roger, what's your overall impression of the CPL? Are you happy with what you've seen so far, Roger?
Well, I think we've seen some very interesting. Generally, we've seen more runs scored in the CPL on a consistent basis than we've seen in the past. The pitchers have been a lot better for batting generally. But I still think that at times, the cricket hasn't been as smart as we would like to see it.
Mm. So when you, what do you mean when you say they've not been as smart? Explain that.
Times we've seen, choices made either in shot selection and our approach of certain situations where I think, the smarter option wasn't chosen.
Mm.
And in some cases, in terms of the tactics as well.
Indeed. And let's look at, you talk about the pitches, of course, the pitch at Providence. Are you happy with it?
It's Providence. I think the Providence has played fairly well. So I don't think you can complain there. You know, it's Providence, you're really going to get a road, so to speak, where you can really drive through the line as you like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Atimaye showed that you can score on there. So, you know.
Roger, what about head?
It's where batsmen have been able to score runs, but you have to get yourself in.
Talk to him about this youngster, Shemron Hetmeyer. I mean, former West Indies under 19 captain, successful as well, 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, he seems to be a live wire. He really looks good. He's coming to Test cricket. He's playing T20. He's got 100. Do you know him well, Roger Hetmeyer?
While I was with the Warriors, he's been in the squad for, as a youth player and then in the squad fully last season. And this is someone who scored a lot of runs as a young player in the county of Forbi. So he used runs. And he grew up playing a lot of spin bowling, so he's very comfortable facing spin. And, of course, batting high up in the order, he's adept against fast bowling as well.
Mm.
And he's a good striker of the ball, as you can see, and not afraid to play his shots. I think, he likes having a license where he can play freely.
Mm-hmm.
Just needs to be smart with it, really.
Does he remind you of anybody that would have maybe played for Guyana or the West Indies?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. I see. No. Let's look at the Guyana Amazon Warriors. You were with them, was it last year, Roger? You were there last year?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, fine. Now, what's your assessment of them so far? Hetmeyer, 223 runs. But then, you have to look very closely. You've got to put your glasses on. Rutherford, 84. Delport, 25. Emirate, 27. Mohammed, 49. Malik, 190. He's gone back to Pakistan. Green, 43. Ronti, 84. Walton, 67 from 5 matches. So apart from Hetmeyer, they've been struggling.
Yes. Hetmeyer has sort of dominated the batting, so to speak.
Mm.
But usually, the Warriors' strength is in the top order. And
right.
You get it up the top. But the Warriors over the years have not been a team that's been full of big names, but they, play well collectively. And it's always been a pretty good bowling unit as well.
Mm-hmm.
So once the batting gets itself together at the top of the order and start to put bigger scores on the board consistently, then, of course, they've already shown they're a very competitive team and they're a team that's difficult to beat. But I think there'll be more of a presence when they start scoring more runs off the top of the order.
Indeed. And in terms of the bowling now, Imran Tahir, he's got 7 wickets, and the economy is always important to look at. The economy rate 6.15 from his 5 matches. Green has picked up 5 wickets. So let's look at young Kemo Paul. He's picked up, 5 wickets as well. Are you happy with the bowling of the Amazon Warriors, Roger?
I think as a unit, the bowling has been, very competitive, pretty good. I think bowling at the death just need to be clear on what they want to do and work out how they're going to, you know, minimize the scoring opportunities for the opposition. I thought that Kimo Paul in particular, when he played, I think that he wasn't quite clear on what he needed to do.
I see. This young man, Kimo Paul, has come on the scene. He's playing for the West Indies. Now, talk to us about him. What's your view on him? Lots of ability?
Well, of course, lots of ability. At the ball as well. He's, you know, he's a pretty good batsman. We haven't seen that much of him with the bat. And I think his bowling has really improved leaps and bounds. He's put on a couple of yards more pace. And at times, I think, you know, maybe he tries to bowl a little too quickly. But, yes, he's a very promising young man. He's one that you... And he's very good in the field as well.
Very good in the field, yeah.
To hear a lot more of in the future.
Indeed. And Roger, before you go, when you do an assessment, we're just about the halfway stage of this competition. Can you pick a winner? It's still too early.
Well, it's difficult to pick a winner. It's still wide open. It's a very competitive competition. But I think that the Knight Riders have the edge. I think they've got a lot of depth in batting with Lynn Monroe, and Ramdin,
yes.
Dwayne Bravo, and then third who controls bat, and if Narayan comes off at top as well, you know, they've got a lot of depth, and they've got similar depth in the bowling, you know, with Fawaz and Pierre bowling very well, you know, getting important wickets and keeping it fairly tight. Ali Khan, you know, getting wickets as well. Yeah, they've
and Narayan as well.
They trying to my show Narayan.
You forgot him, Roger?
Well, it just eluded me for a while. I was wondering, you know, where the other bowler was. But yes, they've got.
And the other bowler is Narayan.
And not just the other bowler, but the bowler.
The bowler, of course.
They've
got
tremendous depth in batting and bowling. So, I think they're the team to beat.
Yeah, I agree with that. And my final question too quickly, things are going well in Dan in terms of cricket? Are your problems solved now?
Problem solved. No, Andrew, Christmas hasn't come yet.
Could you explain that, Roger?
No, we still have the, from when I spoke last, nothing has changed really. There are issues in the court and we're still waiting on those to be heard.
So no elections then?
No elections at all.
Oh dear. So who's the acting president?
The acting president is Mr. Bacchus. I forgot his first name, Mr. Bacchus.
See, have you ever met him?
Yes, I met him a few times. But he is the acting president. He doesn't run the board. Sanasi runs the board.
Yes, Sanasi. Oh, yes, of course. Sanasi is he's the appointed secretary, is he?
Yes, so he says.
Okay, fair enough. Roger, someday will you want to become president of the Ghana Cricket Board?
It's not something I dream of, but if it's in the best interest of cricket, I have no problem with it.
Okay. I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. And by the way, that last question was written just now by Dr. Ford. He asked me to ask you that question. So I just thought I would.
Wait, it took a doctor to come for that question.
Thank you very much indeed, Roger. All right. Always a pleasure to talk to Roger Harper. An update in terms of the scores, any more wickets going on the keel?
Well, no, these two are just batting in at 124. For five, but it's really been slow. But Anton Devsich, I'm really surprised at this. He came in at seven. I don't remember about two seasons ago, played for Trinidad. He was actually their second highest scorer as another wicket. Mamadou Riaz
has
just been taken by Tahir, who's got three now for just 21 runs.
Oh dear.
So really.
So what, 124 for six now?
Yes, 124 for six. But if you look at it, you still have Ben Cutting, who's a successful franchise player, and your best friend, Dr. Ford, Mr. Carlos Braffitt, who, remember the name?
Yes.
Carlos Braffitt.
Well, he's battling later.
He's going to come in at 8, actually.
Okay.
And actually, Mr. Mason, Hayden Walsh Jr. in the team today.
Oh, he's in the team today. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful indeed. 441-790, you can give us a call in front of it. Did we got a call? Yes, hello, welcome, Mason, again.
Hi, Gus.
Hey, Rudolph. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad.
You know, Roger Harper was just talking about Christmas, and you're Rudolph.
Yes, well, it's not Christmas. We should still start preparing for Christmas.
Yes.
I don't think we are not going to, the team, we are not going to have any bad system.
No, not at all.
This year.
Yeah.
We can't have economic problems, and plus a hurricane problems too.
Yes.
So we are going to be spared.
Thanks.
Anyhow, getting on with it. The Trident.
Hmm. Yes, talk to me about them.
Firstly, you think that Dwayne Smith needs to be fired.
Well, what do you think of that catch, Randolph, just if I may ask?
Yeah,
were you at the Oval?
Which one? Meanwhile, that
they dropped, yes.
But I understand if he licked us off. You could have taken the catch.
Oh, yeah. Ronnie Clark. I mean, Ronnie Clark, who's in the studios, he's a good catch. He would call it too, yeah. Ronnie. Can even, I know Ronnie can take it. Anyone can.
There was pain drop
silence. I'm not
dropping
Jody Catch. I realize that Dwayne Smith is not standing up and batting.
Okay.
And
all
he's
right.
Still being played now, to my mind, on past performance.
Mm.
He needs to sit down and they need to understand that they're there to get the game going. You know, about 10 overs, four for them, even if one of them get out in the 10th over, we should be about 80-something, near 90.
In fact, Randolph, in the 5 matches he's played, he's got only 104 runs, best of 15, he's averaging 20.
Yeah, but the other thing is, I don't understand how they're selling the team.
We're okay.
This up and down situation. The guy came in at 1 down, I think, in Guyana. Scored runs, Smith came, and I think got 2 down.
Mm-hmm.
And they're battled well together. You got this, bringing in 1-6, and, you know, to me, it's a bunch of rubbish.
Oh, dear.
And the bowling, you know, everything is, you feel it without a third man, a lot of runs leaking.
Yeah, down there,
third man.
Yeah.
You need to start with a third man, despite whoever bowling.
And having Irfan at third man is even worse,
third
because
man,
he's not very mobile.
As far as I'm concerned, you see, we are playing the Talibans.
Right.
Powell and thing, pitch the ball up outside the stump. Stop bowling the ball short at them. Come and bowl it short. They can pull you out through the leg, or they're strong going through the leg side.
Right.
But you got to pitch it up outside off stump and put in a third man.
No, dear.
But they're going to swipe all the time because that's where they're good at. And if you have, if you don't have a proper spinning option.
No, you know, I agree with that, Randolph, yes.
We don't have a proper spinning option.
That's
what
he
can.
I want to ask Antonio this. When you look at the Barbados Trident side, would you say it's a strong one? Is that a reasonable question?
I think on paper it's definitely a strong team. But as you said,
even the bowling is okay.
Yes,
me neither.
Depending on the surface that's presented, because we look at someone like Raymond Reefer, and there's been a lot of calls surrounding him.
Right.
Something that is time for him, for someone else to have an option in that role. But particular surfaces are very useful for Raymond Reefer. So when the pitch is a bit slower, he's going to get his slower balls to cut. He's going to get his cutters. They're going to be very effective. But on the hard, flat pitch of Kensington, I think it might be, you know,
you think
of
cricket
of
playing
one
it,
of the quicker bowlers,
right.
Shimmer Holder, to
right.
be there.
Indeed.
The wickets are prepared for the Guyanese. The Caribbean, they need to be chilled.
Oh, dear.
But Antonio, why were they bowling so short?
Yes.
No, but we should be preparing. What is the sense of we having 4 fast bowlers?
Right.
And we're not preparing the surfaces for our bowlers. The creator should be, he should be listening to the balance of the things from up in St. Philip.
Oh, dear. No. Randolph made that St. Joseph. No. What changes would you make, though? A big game against the Talos tomorrow starts at 8 o'clock.
What are the changes you make,
Randolph?
I think that Smith should be out.
So you're Smith? That's a reasonable question, Doctor.
So who are you going to open with, Randolph?
Yes.
How are you going to open with it?
Yes.
Smith was sick tomorrow. I have to find some
other. Yeah,
I don't think Hort should be
gonna
up
open
there.
With Amla. And
But Amla and Hope is not really the best combination.
Amla and Guptill and Hope are there then.
Right.
Mm.
Right? He brings the boy Hope.
Right.
Vaughn down.
Mm-hmm.
Smith, throw down.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Whoever is the next player, thing three down. The next guy three down, Foran.
Mm-hmm. Foran.
Who's
yeah.
batted well for the Detroit.
Yeah.
And then Holder can come in that position. By that time, Holder would just want to come in and hit the last couple of balls.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But Ashley Nurse, I find that he be batting with a cuckoo stick. You know, he'd be hitting the ball. Well, he come out, we got 10 balls, and Ashley missed 9.
No, but I think Ryan Marifa's in the team for his all-round performances, and he's not showing it with the bat.
Well, in terms of Ashley, in the 5 matches, what? So how many runs? Eight runs. Yes. Mm. Yeah, 8 runs.
No, we final score, but listen, there's no way.
Mm.
Just like our hero, only living hero,
right?
Who is the world's greatest all-rounder in cricket in the world?
Right.
The guy from Pakistan now joins him. That there will be no other bowler will bowl 23 dot balls in 2020 cricket.
Yeah.
It will never happen, and we should never have lost that match on Saturday.
Mm.
Totally impossible.
Mm.
And Randolph, what do you make of the logic of bringing in Tion Webster into the side for the one-off game? That shocked me because he bowls a bit of spin, and you had that.
What
bowls spin? But he didn't feature.
He's a very good batsman.
I remember him batting high for the Tridents last year, but then he came in at 7, I believe, in this game.
Right.
Unless he got open the innings, if he dropped to his Dwayne dropped Dwayne Smith and bring him to open.
Mm.
But that's the
question is, are they going to drop Dwayne Smith?
Only spend half of these fellas as spinners and
then
get the ball. And there's an alley or something in the side or can.
Yes.
What you see not playing.
Mm. So I just want to get it right though, Randolph. So you're going to drop Dwayne Smith from the side. And in terms of your bowling, what would your bowling look like?
You would have to maintain.
Oh, maintain the same bowlers. So the only change you're making then would be dropping Dwayne Smith. Is that what you're saying?
Mm.
The has to understand
right.
that he is there to get the not to be hitting across the line.
Right.
And he is there to push the score along.
Yes.
Try to keep the ball out of the air. Don't get the air unnecessary.
Yes.
Yes, you want sixes in a game.
I want to ask a question of you and of course of Antonio. Do you think that Dwayne Smith is on the decline as a batsman? I think that's a reasonable question. Is he on the decline, Antonio? Or is he just going to a bad patch?
Yeah, I don't think we have enough in front of us at the moment to judge. I think if you ask Dwayne Smith the question as to when was his best year, he might tell you probably around 2014 in the IPL or perhaps 2013.
Mm.
So perhaps he's not at his best at the moment, but that doesn't hint that he's not good enough.
Mm.
Because if one looks at his performances, he's given us a 50 so far this year.
Right.
His strike rate was not up to where he would like it to be.
Mm.
But I still think that Dwayne Smith has a lot to offer.
Right.
And he still definitely is good
what
enough
I like
to contribute
about
to this
Antonio,
team.
What I like about Antonio is that if he didn't say what he had majored in, I would swear that he was an attorney at law.
Interesting.
But anyhow, gentlemen, continue to enjoy your
All day. Right. Thank you very much indeed. Wonderful indeed. All right, 441790. Gentlemen, let's spend some time now on the team that people feel will win this. I mean, when you talk to the experts, they're saying TKR will win this. Dr. Ford, let's start with you. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, based on the point standings and seeing how the team has performed, the ability of various players to come to the fore and to work together, they're definitely looking really good. I mean, they're the most successful team, and you know they've got a lot of ammunition. Munro and Darren Bravo and McCullum have come through for them. And in addition to that, the many bowling options. I was really impressed with Ali Khan and the bowling in Barbados the other night. And when you look at it, they do have a few bowlers with quite a few few wickets. Ahmed, Narine hasn't really fired in the way we'd expect. and a Ryan too. And they have bits and pieces players that can do stuff for them. They're catching well. So they do look to be the quality of the field, but, you know, maybe one of the other teams will get form and something else will happen. But right now, they look like the team to beat.
Do you agree with that, Antonio?
Yeah, I don't think anybody can refute at this point that TKR are the overwhelming favorites to take on the title. But, you know, as with favorite, there comes the challenge of expectation, and the favorites don't win every race. So I don't want to blight them and say hands down they're going to win. But definitely, I think they're far out as front runners.
Mm. Okay. What's the latest now? Any improvement?
No, I just 144
power outage.
144 for six. With just about 8 balls remaining in the inning.
Oh dear! And remember the neighbors of the crease?
No, not yet. Actually, that stitch is batting well on 35. And Ben Cutting is in.
So Carlos Bravin hasn't batted as yet.
No, they have a very deep
weapon.
Patriots batting lineup. I definitely rate Ben Cutting as a batsman in front of Carlos Bravin. Mm. He's shown he actually got close to 100 in many franchise cricket. So
indeed. Just to let our listeners know that I've got news on the regional Super 50. My understanding is that Zone A would be Trinidad, the Windrush Volcanoes, the Guyana. Jaguars, Trinidad, Tobago, Red Force, West Indies B in Canada. That's in Zone A, and in Zone B, Barbados will be hosting the zone. Of course, the Barbados Pride, the Leewards, Hurricanes, the Jamaica Scorpions, and the Combined Campus and College and the USA. Of course, this is unconfirmed, but it is my understanding that we're going to be having that, and somewhere I've got the possible dates as well, but I know it's going to be early. October. So that's the news coming from the board. Trinidad will host the Zone A, and Barbados will, of course, be hosting Zone B. Let's go and take a call. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Good evening. Hello. Good evening.
Good evening. Hello.
Good evening to you. You're on air.
Okay, that's Mohammed Nasser. How are you, my friend?
Oh, Mohammed Nasser, I heard you today talking to your good friend Dennis Johnson. You always see
the call. Yeah, you know you're my good friend.
You always call when Dennis Johnson is there.
That's right. He's the best.
He's the best.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's very good.
I want to ask you and fellow gentlemen, I have highest respect for.
Yes.
I hear some criticism of the umpires.
Yes.
Do you believe that they had the replays and the reviews that the umpires would be criticized, do you hear that, no?
Oh, dear me. Oh, dear.
You know, it's hard on an umpire.
Mm.
Do his best, and then somebody go look at the review and criticize the umpire. I don't think that is too fair, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not saying that men like you and fellow in natural talent and all, sometimes a fella do something bad, but it can't be that bad. It's only that we're watching the replay. And if we had replays 25, 30 years or 40 years ago, the same thing that happened now would be happening to umpires. So I believe that we got to ease up on umpires a little bit. Oh,
right.
Something is bad, you say. But you can't tell me that you're going to watch a review and then criticize the umpire. I don't think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And when they talk, John Bradman, not up for naught.
Right.
And the umpire said, the boy, come to see you, boy, to come to see John Bradman back. And I was using them days. You know, John Bradman was gone for naught.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that you, I know you brothers know cricket tall, but I still think that we got to ease up a bit on the umpires, because if there were not reviews, there would be no criticism at the level that today. That's basically why I just want to say, and I wish you on your program. You know, I appreciate your program very much. I think you and all who involved does a fantastic job. For
we try. Yes, we try to make those links around the Caribbean, you see.
Yes,
you know, fantastic
program.
We try to make it a regional program, you see.
And not only that, I like 99% of the people who come on my program are fair. Analysis this day, and there's not unnecessary criticism of people.
I agree.
Which make the program even better.
Okay. Mohammed, when would you become a guest? We want to have you, and I want to see you sit next to Dr. Ford.
Anytime you're ready, I'm ready, sir.
By the way, Dr. Ford is a dermatologist.
I know. I am not, sir.
I like that. Have a good night, Nasser.
You too.
All right, beautiful, beautiful indeed. It's made the producer smile for the first time tonight. Doesn't smile very often, you know. Of course,
with
Man United doing so well. Are you a Man United man, Antonio?
Nope, as I think I told you that one commentary over the weekend. I watch Norwegian cricket, cricket in Pakistan, cricket in Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, not too much football.
No, the voice you're hearing is that of Antonio Ali, who plays for the Empire side. And he does some commentaries on the weekend. In fact, Ronnie Clark was telling me earlier today when I spoke to him for an open hour that he thinks you're doing a wonderful job in terms of your commentary. Are you enjoying it so far?
First of all, thank you so much, Ronnie. It means a lot coming from a guy I hold in high esteem.
Mm.
And yeah, I definitely do enjoy the commentary. I enjoy being able to look at some of the other teams play, because the majority of the time throughout the season, I only get to see who's playing in front of me. Sometimes I'm on the field, and it's good to have, you know, an outside perspective of seeing my own team play. And I can see some of the areas where we might need to improve. I can see some of the things that we do well. And also I can look at some of the other teams and areas that they excel and bring it back home to have Empire stronger.
Okay, 43417, you can give us a call. But give us a bit about your background. I mean, are you Bajan?
I come from Barbadian parentage, but I'm from Trinidad and Tobago.
Really?
So I guess I have my foot in Barbados, but my heart
You were born in Trinidad and Tobago and weaned in Barbados.
That actually brings a further level of complication to the story. I was born in Essex.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I was born in United Kingdom.
Essex. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Wonderful. All right. And you play for Empire?
Yeah.
In local competition?
At the moment, I'm not playing, but that's my club.
Is it because you're doing commentaries?
No, I'm doing commentary. Yeah, I guess there's a bit of I can't make the side and a bit of injury as well.
Right, indeed.
I had a pretty bad knee injury earlier this year. So.
And your studies, I know you're very much into some specialties.
Yep, I've completed university now, and it's good not to know the semester is about to start. I imagine the guys up at the university, they will be dreading this year's courses and whatnot. But for me, thankfully, it's the first time in a long time I don't have to worry about semester and exams.
So what are the areas of study?
I did law at the undergraduate level and financial and business economics for masters.
Wonderful. All right. Wonderful. And of course, we need you in the Caribbean. The economies in the Caribbean are struggling. So, of course, Dr. Ford. So if you get a dermatologist and an economist together, that would be a great
combination. I would have been stirring in my seat for a while when you guys discussed the CPL and that deal that was signed. It's one of my two major concerns with the CPL. I think, yes, the CPL is up. It's a competitive league. It's one of the best in the world. But as a region, are we benefiting in the manner that we're supposed to benefit? And the resounding answer is no. We could benefit a lot more. But I guess the parameters of that contract is a discussion for another time.
Interesting. And we're certainly going to get back to you on that. But we're going to go back to Trinidad and talk to the noted journalist, Fazer Mohammed. And Fazer, we were just on the point about the CPL. Is it really benefiting the people of the region? In fact, we had Ernest Hilaire earlier on, and a very interesting interview with him. I'd like to maybe replay it sometime. I thought it was food for thought. Good evening to you, Fazer. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good. All right. You're impressed into the CPL so far? Are you happy with it?
Well, it's a tournament. Really, when you look at it from the very outset, it was never about the growth of Caribbean cricket to date. It was not the fundamental reason for the CPL. It was about expanding what then Caribbean T20, because it was felt the franchise format would be far more attractive to global television audiences. It was felt that it would bring in a lot more revenue. But now in its sixth season, it is still yet to have profit. The Barbados Pride has ended with politics in Barbados. It was once in jeopardy of moving out of Barbados because it was continuing to lose money and couldn't find a sponsor or a significant financial supporter. So essentially, the CPL is a business. And as you would expect in any business enterprise, it happens all the time in the United States. It's where the market serves its best. So in the USA, you'd have franchises moving left, right, and center. In the Caribbean, probably we've already seen the demise of the Antigua Hawksville.
Right.
We've seen other franchises in serious jeopardy. So it's a business, and that's how it's going to be.
Well, in fact, the Jamaicans are complaining when you talk about the business, because as you know, the Talibans had three matches in Florida, only two at Sabina Park, and the three matches they played away. But they play at home, really, away from home, if one case is described, that they lost.
And this is the thing, Andrew. You know, there's an element of naivety to it all. You remember the big rush ahead of the 2007 Cricket World Cup,
right,
by all governments to build all these magnificent venues that are the extensive white elephant dotted on the Caribbean, how they rushed to the sunset legislation to allow for free movement through the Caribbean when people have been arguing about the CSME and so many other issues for decades. Again, with the same thing with the CPL, people's eyes lit up, they saw the money, they saw huge revenues coming in, and that hasn't really materialized. You always hear what encouraging numbers from the CPL, but at the end of the day, what is the trade-off? And if you've got, for example, as in the case of the Talawas, mm-hmm, playing the three alleged home matches when they are virtually the away team in Florida, that's an example for you. You'll recall very well, Andrew,
mm-hmm,
in the second season of the CPL, matches were played at 12 o'clock in midday.
Yes.
Matches were played at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when there was almost nobody there, mm-hmm, because they're trying to reach a global audience way beyond the confines of the Caribbean. So the grumbling will continue. Some people will be silent because they might be benefiting one way or the other. But in other avenues, they'll be bitterly disappointed. And again, Andrew,
mm-hmm,
this is what people are overlooking. This is not about fundamentally the best interest of West Indies cricket. This is a business enterprise, and it's about making money.
Mm-hmm. No, further, in the interest of balance, what are the positives from the CPL?
The positives have been the exposure. Let's not get away from that. For
the
example,
positives to the exposure? Mm-hmm.
You will recall,
mm-hmm,
when the idea of the CPL first came up,
right,
Trinidad and Tobago, in the media, there was a hue and a cry,
mm-hmm,
that this was some campaign by the rest of the Caribbean, mm-hmm, to mash up Trinidad and Tobago's dominance,
right,
of the Caribbean T20, because you recall they had won the 3 years in a row. As it has turned out, there are more Trinidad and Tobago players playing T20 cricket because of the CPL. They,
mm-hmm,
are playing with different franchises. The,
mm-hmm,
same has happened with many other players in many other parts of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting exposure. They're getting opportunities that they would not have gotten previously. They are at Emirates with the Barbados Trident. Now the Guyana Amazon Warriors. He plays in Bangladesh. He plays in other parts of the world. So it has given many more cricketers financial opportunities that they would not have got had it stayed as the Caribbean T20.
Mm. Now, Antonio, just before Fazir came on, you were doing an analysis. Let's start with you, the positives and the negatives.
Yeah, I think that point that Faz mentioned is definitely a positive. Good night to you, Faz. I hope all is well down in Trinidad. I know the weather wasn't too good, but I'll proceed with that point. Yeah, it's always good to have young players get an exposure. You look at somebody like a Carey Pair who's in the CPL now. He's doing extremely well for himself. He would have spent a long time playing cricket in Barbados for Wildy. So that aspect of being able to expose a number of players and having them rub shoulders with international quality players is definitely an overwhelming positive.
Mm-hmm.
But as I would have alluded to earlier, it's difficult for some players to see how they can bridge that gap between representing their clubs in whatever country they come from,
mm-hmm,
and getting up to that CPL level. So I think that's one of the areas that needs some urgent attention.
Mm-hmm.
That gap needs to be bridged. And then there's also, it's done and dusted. There's no point. What is already understood doesn't need to be said. The CPL deals, so the financial rewards go to the owners of the CPL, and very little actually trickles down back to the cricket board because they've already established that agreement for some number of years. You heard from Mr. Hillier, the number of years is, he doesn't quite recall, but I think it's 20 years, if I'm correct. You mentioned it might have been 50. But for some number of years, that agreement has already been earmarked. So the league can continue to grow and grow and grow. But what we receive in terms of cricket West Indies and the region is already been determined. So that's definitely one of the negatives, in my opinion.
Mm. Fazir, you want to respond to that?
And just to add to that, it is 50 years. And many people ask themselves the question, who signs on to anything for 50 years?
Mm.
Who basically sells their rights to any entity for 50 years? Because so much can happen in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years, where you probably want to renegotiate the deal. But who does that?
Mm.
And if you recall as well,
right,
when the CPL first came into being, there were people at the very forefront who we've never seen again. There was a businessman, I believe his name might have been Amjad Khan,
right,
who was at the very forefront. He was supposed to be the front man for the CPL, and he was supposed to be the main man behind everything. We never saw him again after the first season. So you had a number of movie stars and Hollywood personalities turning up in the first season. We haven't seen them again. So it's basically what is, from my gathering of things, it's been a struggle for the authority, for those running the CPL, to really develop the sort of successful financial model to make it a viable entity. But they keep on trying because they think this is something that if it eventually takes hold, then the revenues are going to come. And that's why they're going to persist with it, because they've got it for 50 years. That is across three generations. But when you really think about it, so
very long.
The bottom line is that as far as the business side of things are concerned, the Caribbean is a very expensive place. It's a very difficult place to work in because you have different administrations. Even the authorities, CPL authorities, were saying that when they were in Trinidad last for the opening few matches of the CPL, they were saying that the local aviation authorities weren't giving them rights to fly back into the Caribbean to Trinidad for the final stages of the competition in their chartered aircraft. So that's an example of all of the logistical challenges of having something like a CPL in the Caribbean. So there are many different challenges, many different issues, but I think people thinking that this was all about the growth and the development of West Indies cricket are just as delusional as those who are thinking of the stand for 2020 was the same thing.
Interesting comments coming from Fazer. Fazer, final comment from you. In terms of who's going to win it, your money with the TKR, or you think that the Stars will win it?
I think it's going to be a more open tournament this time around. The Guyana Amazon Warriors, I think, are a very good bet for the title. Because they certainly seem to have a good balance to their team. But at the end of the day, Andrew, as we know, T20 cricket, it can just simply take a brilliant performance to turn things around. Andrew Russell could win it for the title.
Because he's the match winner.
And that's what you get in the T20 format. It's exciting, it's exhilarating, it's often nail-biting, and therefore it's highly unpredictable.
All right. Well, Fazer, I know last week we were trying to get you, but we couldn't, obviously, because of the circus being busy. There was an earthquake there. Are you all right? Did you lose anything? I know you are a big businessman down there in Trinidad. Lots of money.
I wish I was as big as you. You like this story to be told, but it was a frightening experience, I'll be honest with you. 6.9.
Oh dear.
Quite a few buildings, not in the capital city and so on, were damaged, but in rural areas, there's been quite a bit of dislocation related to that. And people have certainly been shaken by it. But I can tell you, this is a new story, that a bigger development has taken place today with the shutting down of the oil refinery.
Yes. Can you imagine?
And Tobago. And from what we understand, by October the 1st, some 1,700 people are going to be put on the breadline.
Say that again, Fazer.
1,700 people are going to be put on the breadline. Many of them will be rehired, from what we understand, as many as 800 might be rehired. But we're expecting tremendous political, maybe even business turbulence to take place over the coming weeks and months. It's going to be some pretty interesting times in Trinidad and Tobago, based on what has happened today.
What would have influenced all of that, Fazer?
Basically, the refinery has been losing money, Andrew. And what has been happening is that the organization known as Petrotrin, it actually costs them more to produce a barrel of oil, essentially. So basically, what is happening is that Petrotrin has been producing oil at a loss consistently. We've been able to buffer that with all of the revenues of the high oil prices from just about 10 years ago. But then the financial crisis hit in 2009, and the debt started to stop. It has become unsustainable to the point now where Petrotrin is in debt to the tune of 12 billion Trinidad and Tobago.
12 billion?
And so, exactly. And so that's the equivalent of 4 billion Barbados dollars. So when you think about it in those terms, and the disruption of people being laid off with the opening of the academic year and school happening on Monday, there are a lot of things happening in Trinidad and Tobago that will really test the results in the same way that earthquake did a week ago.
Oh, serious thing. Is Dr. Rowley going to survive after that?
Well, the general elections are not due for another couple of years, and I can't imagine, given the present circumstances, an early election being called.
Mm.
But there's a local government election coming up next year,
right,
and that could very well be a barometer as to what to expect in 2020.
Mm.
But unlike in the Barbados tradition of giving the ruling party two terms, in Trinidad and Tobago, since 1986, we've been changing parties almost every single term,
right,
with one exception under Patrick Manning from 2002 to 2010,
mm,
when he had a term and a bit. But essentially, the feeling is,
mm,
given the way things are going, it's going to be a real challenge,
mm,
for the PNN to withstand,
mm,
all of these challenges going into 2020.
So basically, you're saying, for say, the PNN will lose?
I don't think that is guaranteed, because there's so much skepticism about the previous administration of the UNC, because, again, it's how you sell a message, and this is how politics works, as you know only too well,
mm,
and you are being a very canny individual as yourself. If you can sell the message,
right,
that the crisis being faced by Trinidad and Tobago right now,
mm,
is due to Kamala Pasati Sessa and the UNC,
mm,
of their 5-year term, then you can somehow try to convince the population that you're trying to give us the bitter medicine to repair all of that damage. But again, it's how well you can sell that sort of propaganda.
Indeed. Because thanks very much indeed for coming through. We're gonna replay this, you know.
Education.
Always a pleasure to have you in the show. And there's a Trinidadian here as well, in the studios, Antonio, who must be a little bit concerned. But thanks very much for coming through and talking to us amazing again. All right.
Happy job, brother.
There you have it. Oh my golly, Petrushin. What's going on there, Antonio?
Yeah, it's largely disappointing. It's an ominous picture. 1,700 persons. That's a large number. I can't imagine it's going to be an easy time. There's no good time to hear that type of news. But you would, mm-hmm, think that, you know, the beginning of the school term, whichever time you reveal that type of news, it's never going to be the right time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, indeed. All right. A score there. I'm coming through. Nikhil, can you tell us quickly?
Yeah. Well, just Guyana. They're in pursuit of the 169. That St. Kitts would have got up to with help from Ben Cutting, who would have scored a quick fire 19, and Carlos Raffitt would have scored just 5 off 2 balls. So there's 6 without loss with Chadwick Walton and Ronke at the crease. So they'll be just looking to chase that down and stay firm on top of the table.
Well, we got another, 4 or 5 minutes left in the show, maybe slightly more than that. Just go to those points. I'm quite keen to hear in terms of the points there. Of course, you got those?
Yeah.
Okay.
What
are the points like?
Right now, Trinidad plays 6 matches and they have 8 points. Jamaica, 7 matches, they have 8 as well.
Right.
St. Kitts, 5 matches with 6 points. And they now have their home run of 3 more games to come up.
Right.
And then Guyana play 5, they would have 6 points. And Trident, 5 games, 4 points. And St. Lucia Stars, 8 games with the same 4 points.
All right. A final stop. We got 6 minutes left in the show. Johnny Gray is on the line, the CEO of Cricket West Indies. Johnny, we tried to reach you earlier. Were you watching CPL?
I wasn't, unfortunately. I was still in the office and just moved away temporarily for my phone, so I do apologize.
No problem at all. Okay. Well, we know you can deliver the message in quick time. A couple of things. You've got the Super 50 coming up very soon. I know there's going to be a launch on the weekend.
Yeah, we've got Super 50 coming up. We've made some progress on the venues this week and hoping to get tickets on sale very quickly on that, and also confirm some additional teams in addition to the regular 6 territorial board franchises and the CCC, the combined colleges and campuses of UE.
Mm. And I know it's interesting that it seems something Dr. Ford is showing me that Ron Sutbeaton has now been cleared and can bowl again. That must please you.
Yeah, he's got undertaken a lot of remedial work with Roddy Eswick and other coaches in the region since his action was called. And, we flew him a few weeks ago to Loughborough following good feedback from when he bowled with all of our coaches during the one-day internationals that took place in Guyana against Bangladesh. So following all the reports and video analysis from that, we flew him to Loughborough and he undertook his test a couple of weeks ago, and we got the results back from ICC today, and he's been cleared to resume bowling immediately, which is great news for him and great news for us.
Now let's go back to the Super 50. How's the launch going to be done? I understand there's going to be a big thing on the weekend. Can you explain that a bit further? launch of the Super 50?
Yeah, we're going to be taking the group stages back to Barbados. So because of the proximity of the Women's World T20 and the finals and warm-up games here in Antigua, we're unable to play in Antigua where we have done in the past few years with Barbados. So we're looking now to take Super 50 to Trinidad and Barbados. As I say, we're just doing the final work and confirming a couple of additional teams to join the regulars. And we'll hopefully be making an announcement and putting tickets on sale immediately for what we hope is a really important Super 50 tournament. We're expecting all the players in the region that want to play 50 over cricket to be available. And obviously we'll lose a few players halfway through the tournament to go and play the one day series against India. But we'll probably welcome back a few from the test series. So, it's obviously it's a big tournament for us leading into the 2019 World Cup.
Indeed. And you've got the under-19s playing in St. Vincent. How's that gone so far?
Yeah, the tournament's been good. We're just into the latter stages now of that tournament on the back of, obviously, the under-17s that took place earlier in the summer as well, so in Trinidad. So it's been another good year of that sort of age group cricket, and we're obviously pleased that through the Windies B that took place in June was able to take part in the Canada League. We've also got a team flying off in the next few days to Canada part in another tournament. So plenty of cricket going around from younger players and players that want to showcase their talents and try and get a franchise contract.
And, of course, you're preparing big time for the ICC in terms of the women. That's going to be what?
Absolutely,
November,
yeah. The women are here in Antigua at the moment. Several weeks in, they're shortly joined by the captain, who's making her way back from the Kia Super League, where she's been playing. Unfortunately, not quite lifting the trophy, but making it to finals day that took place a couple of days ago. So, yes, Stefani's going to be back, and the whole squad will therefore be assembled here in Antigua, building up to a really important series against South Africa. So we've got one day internationals taking place in Barbados, and then the rest of the series taking place in Trinidad. So playing South Africa in the lead up to Women's World T20 event is going to be a really good measure of where the women's side is in comparison to what's an ever improving and stronger South African team.
Well, Johnny, we got to leave you at this moment. Of course, babe, maybe we can talk to you again, give you a lot more time next week to explain. By then, we'll be a little bit closer in terms of a couple of things, the announcement of the Super 50, etc. So, but we want to thank you for coming through and talking to us, amazing guests, and enjoy the rest of the evening, Johnny.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
All right. So there you have it. Interesting show. Fazeer Mohammed, as usual, brilliant. Philo Wallace, Ernest Lay. I thought it was interesting to hear from him. We went to Dallas to talk to Roger Harper. And, of course, Johnny Gray was very much on the line. And the Deputy Prime Minister, Sean Richards, by now he should be there at 1 o'clock. I'm Andrew Mason. He's hoping for a brighter tomorrow. Good night.